Hello, and thanks for joining us on the podcast that discusses all things gaming. Coming to you from the home of Gen Con and the gaming capital of the world, this is The Established Facts. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Established Facts. For those of you keeping count, this is episode 57. This is Big Don, your host for the afternoon, evening, morning, whenever you decide to sit down and actually listen to this episode. We don't care. And starting to my left...
Prime.
Anton.
Hey, guys, this is Derek.
Ragger, a.k.a. Jeremy.
This is Josh.
And joining us from Texas, I believe...
Jason with Jasco Games.
Hey. How you doing, Jason?
Doing good. How are you?
Doing well.
And welcome back.
That's right. I was going to say, for those of you who don't remember, then you need to shame yourself and go back and listen to our first episode with Jason. But Jason is our friend from Jasco Games. He's going to hang out with us this episode, and we're going to talk about some really fun stuff coming up on him on his Kickstarter with the new Mega Man board game. We'll get into that a little bit later in the episode. So, without any further ado, our versus topic for this episode 57, talking about video gaming and other gaming medium and transitioning in board games, we're going to do a versus topic of transitioning from a game to a different type of game, or transitioning from a game to a movie. So that's our versus topic. So what is more effectively translated? A game to a game, or a game to a movie? And, you know, just use the earliest precedent of whatever your example is for your decision. So, starting with Prime? No? You don't want to start?
No.
Okay. Well, we'll start with Josh.
I'm going to have to go with game to movie. I know, it's surprising, but hey, I enjoyed the Mario Brothers.
Oh, wow.
I know. Started off with a bang.
Yeah. One of the 10 Americans that have.
That's right.
Ragar?
I like the idea of a game to a game.
Derek?
Game to game.
Game to game. Anton?
Game to game. Because, yeah.
They're stacking up against you there, Josh.
I'm not surprised. Everything's stacking up against me today.
I'm going to be on the fence with it.
Prime?
Yeah, I'm going to be on the fence.
Again?
I can't help it.
Come on now.
I think you could help it.
You know, ever since we've allowed him on here, I haven't been nearly on the fence as much.
I'm just saying. He's taking everybody. he's kicking everybody off. That's what it is.
Yep.
Jason, what would you say is more effectively translated?
I've seen too many bad video game movies, so I don't have to go game to game.
All right.
I can only think of one good video game movie.
What was that?
I can think of a couple, but I think that for my decision, I think it's definitely going to be fairly one-sided on this one. I think I'm definitely going to have to say game to game because it's just, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mr. Demery, tell us, inform us why our decision for game to game may be flawed.
I don't think yours is flawed. I have a personal preference.
Oh, see, that's where you went wrong.
So you're flawed.
Number one, I don't have as much experience playing like a video game converted to a role-playing game or a video game to a card game. I have a couple. I just don't have a lot of experience with it personally. I have more experience with the game-to-movie deal. But it's because I've created a mentality within myself since the conversations I've had multiple times about books to movies. This is very much similar. I can't compare them as... they're not the same type of medium. So it comes down to me, a video game, I judge it as a video game. Yes, a movie may have the same title, I judge it as a movie. Should it be the same? Yeah, there should definitely be some links to it. But did I enjoy the movie? Did I enjoy the game? I think it's been more effective to see a enjoyable movie come from an influence of an enjoyable game.
Right.
Something I'd like to add to that, because I don't want to just, you know,
pick on Josh.
Make this a pick on Josh episode.
Why not?
Because that was last episode.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was every episode.
I thought there was the one before.
No, the...
Yeah.
Oh, you know, essentially every episode before. Well,
okay, at least we're all on the same boat here.
So, with games and movies, one of the things that I like seeing, the at least with more modern games, is things like Metal Gear Solid 4 or Uncharted, where you're essentially getting a movie with the game. That's one area that I'm really... really looking forward to seeing more of that.
Yeah, I'd say that's true about Metal Gear Solid. Metal Gear. Wow. What? 75% of that? You can play that game... What was it?
We had the conversation. You can beat Metal Gear Solid 5 in about 7 to 8 hours if you don't. If you skip all the videos. It takes 17 if you watch all of them.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yep.
I think that...
Go ahead, bombard me.
No, I was actually... I can't say that it's definitely one side in my mind. I mean, it's almost an even match between the two, but Josh already took up all the room on the fence, so
yeah,
I decided I'd pick, you know, the side that was a little bit higher in percentage. But, you know, there's definitely been some movies that I have enjoyed that have been, I guess, creatively interpreted from games, from a precedent of games. Mortal Kombat, one of my favorite 90s movies, obviously started as a video game. There's a few that I've seen that I really didn't like. I, too, am probably the only other person in the world that enjoyed the Mario Brothers movie.
I enjoyed it.
But, I think that overall, it's funny to me that Hollywood has such a hard time interpreting a game.
I think the best example of this is...
It's bidirectional. Both sides of that have failed...
Well, yeah.
Fantastically.
Now, more recently, there's been a lot better renditions of interpretations from game to movie or something like that. But, I mean, you have... probably the biggest point on this that we've talked about over and over and again has been the Dungeons & Dragons movie. How do you take a genre... of gaming, like role-play gaming in the Dungeons & Dragons world that is
storytelling.
Infinite in possibility in storytelling, and turn it into a bust of a movie. How do you do that, Derek? Tell
easily.
Us how. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
You try to explain the mechanics. But what I was actually going to go to is game-to-game, so we're not just beating up on movies... game to game, there have been a lot of successes, I feel. Like the Dungeons & Dragons board games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
UFS is another one, going from
video game to
card games. There has a lot of video games, like Uncharted. I haven't played that board game yet. Have you, Josh?
I have it. We haven't cracked it open yet.
Okay.
Kind of like most half the video games I own.
Right. So we can't speak on that yet.
That's why I said I don't have a lot of experience.
Well, like the Pathfinder Rise of the Rune Lord card game.
Oh, yeah. Or the Pathfinder board game.
Yeah.
That was done really well.
Yeah. Here's another example. You have Resident Evil, the video game, Resident Evil, the movie, and Resident Evil, the deck building game.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a Resident Evil deck building game?
Yes, there is. There's a couple other game systems in there too. That there's a board game for Resident Evil, and there's a couple other ones too.
Well, I think that brings up another point that's kind of that we didn't necessarily cover it in our versus topic because I wasn't sure how confusing it would be, but I figured we'd probably touch on it a little bit. But the reverse transition from like a movie or television media to a game,
Battlestar Galactica,
epic failure of all time,
Firefly.
Well, no, I mean I think that like Star Trek. The Next Generation. I'm a huge Star Trek Next Generation fan. There's Star Trek Online.
There's a deck building game.
Yeah, there's a deck building game now.
There was Star Trek Next Generation computer games. I remember playing one.
Yeah, there was in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, there was a Star Trek competitive card game, TCG game. And it was successful. You know, I mean, it was. I still see PAX at Gen Con.
Dresden Files went from TV show. Well, actually, went from book to TV show to
tabletop.
Tabletop
Yeah, and that's successful. And successfully in actually in pretty much each iteration of that specific subject matter.
Well, it's the same thing with Firefly and Supernatural. I know that both of them have tabletop games that you can play, and they originally started as TV series.
And then there's the flip side of the coin, E.T., the only game in history that's been buried.
Yeah,
that's not true because that one.
I'm pretty sure that movie should be buried too. But that's just me. Hey, I'm not a huge E.T. fan.
That's a classic film.
Sorry.
Total Recall is just as bad.
His name is Don Martyr. Everybody, those of you who are gonna sit.
Hey now. We're gonna get a bunch of. We're gonna get the only one ever piece of mail we're ever gonna get is gonna be hate mail. I hate that guy. He said he doesn't like E.T.
Yeah, you're darn right. I don't.
Anyway. So kind of transitioning into our discussion topic, you know, one thing that Jason's going through right now, over at Jasco is, you know, he's got a lot of really cool projects coming up, but one of his biggest projects, happens to be the subject matter of our discussion topic, and that's transitioning from one game or game culture or even just the characters of a game to a different style of gaming and the challenges that you meet when you come to that kind of thing and kind of the victories and then the failures that you can run into. So Jason, kind of give us a little bit of insight on some of the things that you've been dealing with going with your Mega Man board game and your UFS stuff.
Okay, well we'll start with UFS since we've been doing that a lot longer. In Universal Fighting System, you know, we're trying to take characters from not just video games, but any media we can get a hold of. Up to this point, it's been mostly fighting video games because the game mechanics themselves work really well with the fighting video game since it was kind of designed after Street Fighter and that kind of game mechanic. But now we're going to be bringing in Mega Man and all the characters from Mega Man and the Robot Masters and all that into the Universal Fighting System. And we're going to have to figure out, you know, the best ways to bring off their video game mechanics into a fighting card game. So, luckily, you know, Capcom was on the same page. They put Mega Man into the new Smash Brothers game. You have Marvel versus Capcom, so you have characters like Zero and some other Mega Man games that are characters that have been in fighting video games. So we have a little bit to go off of that. But it's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of licensing involved. We have a lot of different video games, and, you know, working into movies and comic books and everything else for UFS because everything has to be compatible to fight against each other so you can answer that age-old question of who's going to win in this fight. With Mega Man the board game, we're experiencing a few different challenges that we're not haven't been, you know, familiar with, because in Mega Man the board game we're really trying to feed the fans of the video game the most. So in Mega Man the board game, we want to get the feel of, I'm going to play as Mega Man, I'm going to fight through these stages just like the video game with a kind of different experience, but at the same time everyone at the table is going to be playing against me. So the kind of the mechanics of the game now, to where we could get the best interpretation of video game to board game, to where it feels like you're playing a version of the video game with your friends, kind of a multiplayer, is that when you're playing as your protagonist character, the rest of the table is working against you as Dr. Wily's minions and all the bad guys and the Robot Masters. So the whole time you play, everyone is involved during everyone's turn, which is not something you can really reflect in a video game, especially a side-scroll game like this, where it's, you know, you're playing a platformer. And typically platformers are one player, wait for your turn to end, go to the next player. They're experimenting right now. I think Mighty No. 9 is doing this, where you can do a co-op. It's probably similar to a lot of the old hack and slash video games like Ninja Turtles or the X-Men game, where you have 2 to 4 players kind of going through the same stage. But as a board game, in the Mega Man universe where they've never had that co-op play, we're trying to get it to where it feels like you're still playing through the levels yourself and you're fighting all these challenges. And then, you know, ultimately beating the Robot Masters and gaining their powers and continuing on to beat Dr. Wily while everyone else is doing the same thing and trying to keep you back, kind of like a Mario Kart sort of element.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, what kind of balancing considerations do you have to keep in mind with things like UFS or the Mega Man stuff?
Specifically to UFS, balancing, you know, this it's an 8-year-old card game now, so we've gone through a lot of trial and error, watching different playtests, different designers kind of make their mistakes and working off of that. So UFS is more experience is how we've gone through the balancing, and now we're pretty comfortable with where we are. I think the game is extremely balanced compared to how it's ever been. We have the most competitive decks than we've ever had. You know, it's not even just like, you know, 8 or 9 decks. It's I can't even count on my hands how many decks could be competitive in an organized play environment. Mega Man, the board game's a little bit different because, you know, it still has to be balanced because you're playing several people at the table, and it has sort of a deck construction element to it. There are a few different ways to play. You can grab all the cards from all the possible decks, shuffle them together, and just have a random deck that will still work. Or you can go through the deck and build a constructed deck as your opponents are doing the same thing at the table and have a specific goal in mind while you play. So the balancing is something we're getting used to. There's a lot of playtest involved to make sure, you know, for one, since everyone at the table is playing as the bad guys and you're the only good guy, that their cards aren't too powerful because they're kind of ganging up on you. And we have some elements in the game to keep that from overwhelming you, because as a group, the bad guys can only play the same number of card difficulties as the protagonist playing through the game. It usually is going to be a Mega Man character or, you know, another protagonist character, whoever you decide to be. And we've also introduced the dice element, except it's not, we're not using actual dice for rolling. We're doing kind of the classic Sabretooth Games throwback, since all of their games have involved die rolls on cards. We have a die in the center of the card that's going to represent a 1 through 6. It's actually a picture of a die. And that's going to be how you make your rolls. So part of the strategy is also building your deck to where you want to manipulate your dice rolls just as much as you want to manipulate your card abilities.
That's neat.
Yeah, I mean, I've been excited about this since I first heard about it, because a while ago, Capcom was going to release a video game version of Mega Man 2 where you can build the stages and, like... But they canned that project. So then when I heard this was coming up, I was like, oh, yes. I'm like, I want this now.
Shut up and take my money.
Yes, shut up and take my money.
Oh, the natural theme of gamers. Oh, that's so awesome. Shut up and take my money.
So, Jason, you mentioned, like, some of the challenges that, for your board game, like, some of the challenges that you've had with keeping it balanced amongst multiple players. And I know that being kind of a collectible card game player and things like that, it tends to be that occasionally you have one player or two players that'll kind of outshine everyone else, or they're kind of, you know, oh, it's us versus the rest of the world kind of mentality. And I know that you talked a lot about, like, trying to find that balance, whereas in UFS you kind of have that down to a science, not necessarily perfect, but, you know, for the most part, you know, you have gone through your trial and error and you kind of figured out the formula on how to make that successful. What kind of, like, what kind of mechanics do you have to kind of keep it balanced to where if I'm a new player and I sit down with people who've played it 3 or 4 times, I still have just an equal chance of winning as everyone else at the table? Like, what are some of the things that you've done that are unique to your game?
Sure. So, like I mentioned earlier, you know, it has sort of that Mario Kart feel to it. Now, if you're the leader in Mario Kart, you have to always be aware of that blue turtle shell.
Oh, yeah.
That's holding you back.
And the light.
Well, if you make a lot of enemies in a game like this where, you know, kind of everyone can work against you, then when you're in the lead, or if you're dominating the game, everyone else can hold their cards to kind of keep you from moving forward. And hurt you, take your lives, set you back on the stage, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of, you know, kind of making the right alliances, working with the right people at the right time, as much as it is having, you know, a great deck and great game style and great gameplay. So it's a great mixture of diplomacy and diplomatic ability with your strategy.
Out of curiosity, how long would a typical game go for? I'm not sure if you guys have even gotten that far.
Now, it really depends on how many players you have and if you want to go through the entire game, because, you know, if you want to play it just like the video game where you defeat all 6 or 8 Robot Masters and Dr. Wily stage, it will take a little bit longer, especially if you have more players. But the game can play anywhere from two. Right now, we're saying 2 to 5 players. With expansions, you can probably play up to 2 to 8.
That's awesome.
So you can have a pretty big field of play. But when you do that, we'll recommend that you take a few Robot Masters out of the stage, so you're only playing, you know, 4 stages instead of 8.
So you definitely have, like, you have expansions. At least in your mind, you have expansions set up for.
Right, and the Kickstarter is going to be one of the things that's going to enable us to bring those out a little bit faster and okay. You know, more fulfilled. That's kind of the main reason for the Kickstarter. We plan on doing the game regardless, but the Kickstarter is going to allow us to bring in better materials, more expansions to the game, you know, more minis, that kind of thing. And people really like minis, especially the quality of sculpts that we have for this game.
Are you planning on going like Mega Man 1, 2, 3 sequentially, or is this going to be sort of a mix mash?
So right now, the core game is going to be Mega Man 1, and if it's successful enough, and I think, you know, we feel like it will be, then we would like to go through the series just like the video game progresses. Awesome. And allow you to expand onto the game. Now, the cool thing about doing that is, unlike in the video game, we're going to be able to mix and match Robot Masters, so you don't have generic Mega Man 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you can have your favorite bosses from certain Mega Man games and play all the
That's
want.
Awesome.
Derek just
Derek's got the credit card out for you.
Right, it makes the stage selection very interesting, because if you're used to the pattern on Mega Man 1, where if I start with this boss and go to this boss, and, you know, the powers kind of help you against certain challenges, well, if you mix and match the games, it's going to be a little bit different on which boss do I beat first, and what strategies do I need to do to
That's
go through this
cool.
boss's stage.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Now, one mechanic that I'm really interested in, and I think we talked about... now, if I'm not mistaken, there was at least some discussion about the game at Gen Con. You guys were at Gen Con, and because I know Josh or Derek, they had sat down with me and kind of told me about some of the fun stuff that was coming in the board game. You can pretty much customize your level build. Is that correct?
You can either customize the level... or you can have it randomly generated for you.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So it's pretty cool that way. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can predetermine the way you're going to play with your friends. You know, we're probably going to have an organized play kind of tournament format for it, where, you know, we might even have teams set up. Or you can do the game completely random, so you never know what's going to be thrown at you, and it makes it a little bit more of a challenge. But you're still using a lot of strategy on what to do from your hand, what to do in certain situations, certain challenges, what boss to fight, that kind of thing. But the main stage, let's say you want to fight Cutman stage, you're going to have stage tokens laid out on the field, and you're going to go through the stage in order, you know, left to right, run through the stage. You'll flip over their token, and you'll have a variety of challenges on there. Just that would be on that boss's or that Robot Master's stage in the video game. So let's say you have to choose between, you know, jumping over the spikes or, you know, fighting off the Dr. Wily's minions or, you know, whatever else you can get faced off on that part of the stage. Now, just like in the video game, there's not just one way to beat the stage.
Huh.
So you choose which path you're going to take, and it's going to determine, you know, if you fail, what happens to you, and if you're successful, how far ahead you're going to go on the level.
Although this is kind of a loose connection, I kind of see similarities between some of the stuff you're describing and a game called Mice and Mystics. Kind of a board game that tried to take RP elements and, you know, turn it into a dice and story driven system.
I don't think our designers have played that game, but you know, there are a lot of similarities between games to games a lot of the time, and mm-hmm. it was just pretty interesting. Game mechanics, you know, some designers often have really similar ideas, and they may not have ever talked to each other or played each other's games.
Well, that actually kind of gets me into. I was going to kind of open it up to the table as far as like having, you know, we talked a lot about different games that have gone from video game form to deck building form or PC games to like board games or something like that. Like, in general, as gamers, what are some of the challenges that we see or some of the benefits that we see as players? And you know, some of us, obviously Derek has done some game design and stuff, Jason has done a lot of game design, and I think we all kind of have a flavor of the mechanics in gaming and just the elements of the game that we really enjoy playing with, like, what are some of those things that we really strive for or look for in games?
I personally look for the flavor of the game. So, for instance,
chicken's good.
Chicken is very good, although I do like lamb. With a hint of mint jelly.
Jeez.
But, for instance, with... I'm going to continue along with UFS and the Mega Man stuff. With fighting games, when it transitioned to UFS, it was, you're looking for... Are you fighting somebody? Are you actually using attacks? There was a short period of time when there was a lot of more... alternate winds and like what's called the Gray Wars, where you're building foundations and stuff like that. So it transitioned away from the feeling of a fighting game into more of a strategy type
card game
type thing. And then it went, when Jason picked it back up, it went right back to, okay, we're now a fighting game again. We're basing everything off of attacks. And with Mega Man, there were certain things that I was really looking for. One is, can Mega Man take the powers of the bosses? Because that's unique to Mega Man. And two is the level design. Because, again, it's unique to him. It's the Dr. Wily stage where you can fight all the bosses over again and all that stuff. That's uniquely Mega Man driven.
I think the big thing that you're really shooting for here is the nostalgia aspect.
Oh, yes.
Authenticity.
It brings
it's got to still feel games, like it.
Yes, it has to feel like it. It brings these games into new terrain. It almost like reinvigorates these games.
Yeah, that's...
The great thing, and now that you bring up the nostalgia, great thing about working with Capcom on this is that every step of the game mechanics... We actually have to get approved by Capcom Japan and their Mega Man game designers, which means that they're actually interested enough in our game design to test it and make sure that it plays enough like the video game and does bring in all those elements that they're comfortable enough to bring it out and approve each step of the way.
That's very cool. That's awesome.
Which we like because it shows that they care about what we're doing, and you know, it keeps both of us kind of in line. It shows that they care about the IP.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, it definitely shows that they care about just the, like you said, just the IP in general. Like, Mega Man as a character and the stages and the bosses and the world that he encapsulates, that really is encouraging for me as a gamer.
I'm super psyched.
Yeah.
Yeah, and thinking about it from a game, from a person who's played, God, almost all of them, up through the years, it's one of those things where, if I was coming into this as something I'd never seen it before, and I see the released game, I'm sitting here thinking, this seriously has to hold true to the Mega Man feel. Versus, if it doesn't, it's going to draw a lot of rage. And that's part of what I see why Capcom is really taking an interest in this, is because it's something that, especially with Capcom and Mega Man, that's one of their huge names. And it really, there is a huge community behind it. So
I mean, it's similar to the Pathfinder game, board game as well, because, well, it's card game.
The adventure card game. I was like, they have not made a board game yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Right. But it had to feel, you had to have leveling in your characters, which they do. You have to be able to... go through a storyline, which is what you can do there. I mean, there are certain aspects that define certain games, and you have to hit on those, or else you're going to completely kill whatever game that you're trying to make.
I think to bring it around to the movie aspect of things too is as long as you have to keep that same mentality when it comes to developing a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You have to at least keep the core basics of what that game was based off of in order to make a successful movie, in my opinion, too.
You know, I've had I think I've brought this up quite a few times. The game, The Lord of the Rings, The Third Age. It's a PlayStation 2 game that the concept behind it was that you take up a fellowship that is about 3 to 4 hours behind the fellowship. And it's not like they're, you know, jokes or anything, but they're that's what they are. They're doing similar things, but making sure that everything goes well for the other fellowship while they're doing all the research. You get to experience all of the elements that you're used to from the movies and the books or whatever that is, but you get to experience them from new character ways. And I think what that does is, I think our overall theme is that we're trying to a successful transition from either from a game to another form of media. You have to feel like you're experiencing the original game, at least the major aspects of it. Yes, the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game. I feel like I'm playing a Pathfinder game when I'm playing the Adventure Card Game. I really hope that the Mega Man game, Mega Man board game, is the same type of way, because it feels that way now. I enjoyed when Mega Man 9 was released for the PlayStation 3 or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
It's the same game, same type of game, but you were able to play it on a new console. And with, you know, the more buttons at your disposal, you were able to do quite a few more things. But it was bringing the nostalgia, bringing the thing that makes you feel all warm and fuzzy about the game, and bringing it into a new atmosphere. Tracy Hickman's Sojourner Tales, it's going to be coming out here real soon.
That's something that's going to be interesting.
The idea of bringing storytelling from either role-playing games or any format, because now they've got a video game designer who's going to be creating a story for Sojourner Tales. They are trying to make storytelling into a board game.
Yeah.
Which you see sometimes, but you know, I don't know about the success of it yet, so I'm excited about that. I'm excited about bringing a video game into a board game. I'm waiting for somebody to come and say, okay, I'm going to take a movie and make it into an effective board game. Like, a silly... I want to see a Princess Bride board game, because I think that'd be funny. But you'd be reading most of the time.
All right, Jason, go.
I do have a history of being pretty good with licensing, but we'll see what we can do.
Speaking of that, is this Jasko's first board game?
This will be our first board game. Now, the first one that we've published, we have designed board games that no one knows about and we can't really bring out yet or talk about. We actually have, I think, 5 games in the works right now behind the Mega Man the board game, all of which are I think we might have one card game and the rest are board games.
I have a question about the Mega Man 10s for UFS. Is there going to be a Mega Man set in the work?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, we have a 3-year plan set up for release right now, and you know, we're always going to be kind of 3 years ahead of ourselves for design and release schedule and everything like that. The next core set is what we're, that's what we're calling it right now, and I'm not sure what the official name's going to be. But the next big expansion, where we have, you know, a big introduction of a lot of cards and a lot of new mechanics, is going to be Mega Man and Darkstalkers, both from Capcom. And the plan right now is to introduce some sort of starter deck for both of those games. We've already determined which characters they're going to be, and then booster packs to accompany them. So things to build onto those and add new characters to the game. And then after that, there's actually several more releases for the Capcom licenses and a few other licenses.
Sweet. Okay, so there are new licenses in the works?
There are.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
Leave that there.
Yep. We're not asking you to name them.
Yep, just wanted to know if there were new licenses. So.
And we get a lot of licensing emails from the fans all the time. On the emails, on the forums.
On the forums, yes.
I can't even tell you guys how many emails we get a day about, you know, just different things from the fans, but which is great. Shows great, great strengths
for
the game.
Super Smash Brothers meets UFS.
And every time someone brings that up, we have to unfortunately say, you know, we can't really confirm or deny anything. We can't talk about it because whether we have it or not, there's always some kind of legal jargon, and, you know, even if we don't have a license, maybe we want it in the future and we don't want to have anything, you know, saying that we are looking at it or anything like that.
Yeah.
But,
See, I was thinking...
But when it comes to licensing for UFS, this is something I think all of our players should know, is if you look at a typical release schedule in a year, we can fit in about 4 big releases and maybe 2 mini releases, like a 10 or something like that in a year. So if players want us to have, you know, every single license that they like, and you want to have, you know, every big comic book, every big movie, every big video game in there, we won't be able to release them all in you know, a 3-year time period. So as long as the fans understand, we want to have as many cool licenses and cool characters as we can get, and we're working on new formats so that, you know, the more we have, the more we can play with. You got to, you know, understand that we have to limit it to probably about 3 or 4 a year and kind of work off of those. And usually it's going to be a major license accompanied by a couple of smaller licenses.
Well, I have to say personally that Darkstalkers coming back is a big boon again. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, Darkstalkers in the UFS history, I think most people know, best-selling set under Fantasy Flight Games with Realm of Midnight. Factory sold out very quickly, which I think was the first set that they factory sold out of during a normal release before, like, it was sitting on the shelves for a long time. Since then, since we took over the game, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm pretty sure our print runs are larger than their print runs were for each set. And we've sold out of Tides of Vengeance. We've done a reprint of Red Horizon 1. So, and then the King of Fighters is selling extremely well. I expect almost all of those sets to sell out, if not all of them, shortly after their releases as well. So, great news for those.
Yes.
Do you have that, any? That's all right. Let we awkward pause. you gotta have them every once in a while. Do you have any? I know you do a lot of work in licensing so far. That's what we keep hearing about, and you're bringing in all these custom characters and stuff. But is there a speakable desire about creating your own content? It's always something you want to ask game designers. You guys are designing games based off licenses. What content? I'm lost.
Oh, please. Red Horizon.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So Red Horizon, we've developed. We actually have 4 comic books already written. We're working on getting line art and that kind of thing ready to go for those.
Jeez, Josh,
to get that,
be
to get that IP out there.
Did you
I'm sorry?
Know? No.
I think so. Continue, Jason.
Yeah, they're written. They aren't published. So most of our fans probably don't even know about those yet. But we have 4 comic books in the work. The plan is to release them sort of like a No Quarter magazine or a White Dwarf magazine, where we have a lot of game content in the beginning and end, with some advertising and things for anyone that's looking to support trading card games, maybe sleeve companies or single stores or anything like that. And we're going to want to do a lot of coverage of upcoming events, what's coming out, what decks are looking cool, what characters do people want to see. And then in the center of the magazine is going to be a full comic book for the Red Horizon IP. And from there, we're still looking to expand the IP possibly into a video game, possibly into an anime. Those all are very high budget projects. So, we're working our way up there. We're not going to jump into it head first and, go ahead of the before we have all the fans for it, but we're building the fan base up that way for our IP, and we have another IP in the works. So, wow.
Very cool.
Oh, so you're another of your own IPs?
Yes.
Okay.
I love it. Every time we have Jason on here, it's the most secretive show. So you have another IP in the works? Yes.
You'll listen to this podcast.
I can't tell you about it. I want to. My feet are dancing under the table. I can't tell you.
Listen to the podcast for an hour and learn absolutely nothing.
Not quite.
I did have a question. You mentioned earlier about, gaining licensing permission and things like that. And again, like I said before we started the show, Derek and I actually sat down. He showed me how to play UFS, and I definitely enjoyed the experience. We only got to play one game, but I had a really good time with it. He gave me some cards. I sat down and started putting decks and stuff, deck ideas and stuff like that together. But you mentioned one of my favorite genres of, I guess, geekery, if you will, is like the Marvel, the old Marvel stand-up arcade game. And being able to play multiplayer and stuff like that. The question immediately came to me, have you ever considered through your UFS brand in marketing, like the Marvel versus Capcom? Have you, again, being a new player to it, have you considered gaining some of the licensing for that stuff, or have you guys done that before, or?
Unfortunately, I can't talk specifically about any kind of
I totally saw that coming.
I was just curious if you guys, if that's an avenue that you would at least entertain possibly looking at,
I can tell you, we we have looked into comic book properties, movie properties, and video game properties, obviously. So anything can be on the table. We just, you know, we can't be specific. We can't be very close to specific even. So,
well, as a noob fan, that is my only potential request. If it ever happens, I would love to see that, because I played a collectible card game forever and ever and ever ago that was a Marvel-based, Marvel Overpower. I played that in the early 90s, and then I know they had the Versus with the Marvel, but I just think it would be kind of neat to be able to sit down with some fun superhero characters or something like that against, like, Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat characters or something like that. It just, you know,
yeah, I mean, it's...
again, though, it comes down to that balancing. Like, how do you balance an optic blast from Cyclops versus, you know, a Scorpion uppercut? I mean, really? Like, how do you...
If they can do it in a video game.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah. But...
Use a starvation deck and you can't feed your soldiers.
There you go. There you go.
Yes, but then you can't complete your quests. Sorry.
I don't know what just happened there.
On that topic, that's kind of the beauty of UFS. That's the main reason, you know, other than mechanics, why we wanted to pick that up from Fantasy Flight Games when they decided to drop their CCG lines and focus on, you know, more board game oriented card games, is, you know, a lot of card games other than Magic are based on a fad. Like, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a cartoon and it's going to lose popularity. And Pokemon, who knows how long it'll be able to keep steam. It's been around a lot longer than some.
It's been a while.
Got to catch them all before they blow away in the wind.
That's right.
Exactly. So, but with UFS, the beauty of it is, you know, there are a lot of things that can be popular at a certain period, and when it is popular, we can pick it up and please the fans. And, you know, all those old licenses are still there. So if people are nostalgic and still want to play with the old, you know, Street Fighter, Penny Arcade, Warhammer Fantasy characters, whatever else has been in the game, they're still there to play, and we can keep picking up new licenses and new exciting characters. And, you know, maybe not, they don't even have to be licensed. You know, we can talk about public domain things like Cthulhu or Abe Lincoln or, you know, other popular characters like that.
The President of Abe Lincoln. UFS.
Yeah.
That'd be hilarious.
Have you guys one thing that you know, I'm primarily a Magic player when it comes to card games. And one thing that they've been doing recently is like the Vault collection. Have you guys considered doing anything like kind of reissuing heroes, maybe new artwork or something like that with like your existing, you know, same power level and everything like that, but just kind of like, hey, you know, this game's been out for a while and we wanted to kind of throw it back out there that, hey, these guys are available, they're fun. No, they're not necessarily tournament legal, but, you know, it's definitely, you know, half of the cards in the Vault collection are not tournament legal, but to have a foil Sliver Queen in your hand is just like, hello. Yes, awesome.
I'm sorry, Don. Jason can't talk about
that. He can't talk. I can neither confirm nor deny.
Well, that's something we can talk about. We actually recently made an announcement. Now, this hasn't been done in UFS before where we, you know, we have a lot of reprints or alternate arts of older cards.
Right.
But we've been slowly bringing in different ways of doing that. Now, since we have licensing, we have a World Championship card that, you know, it's just a card that says UFS on it, and it's a purple foil card that's cool. But every 3 months, we do a vote. We put some new characters up from older sets from back all the way back to 2006 and let the players vote on what the card's going to be. And it ends up being that card for 3 months until there's a new vote.
Oh, wow.
You get to bring old characters back into the game and, you know, see how they'll fare against the newer characters in the standard environment. Now, they're all still legal in the legacy environment, and there's going to be a new extended environment. And then in addition to that, we made a recent announcement that we will be doing kind of a core set with our independent property that's going to be able to reprint a lot of the license cards with our artwork, with our characters' artwork, with the same names and things like that. But so that way you can still play with the older cards. But if you want, and if you don't want to go back and find those old cards from a collection and pay more for them or whatever, you can bring them in with the newer artwork. And that'll keep, you know, a cycle of cards that are kind of always in the game mixed in with all the new mechanics and the new exciting characters.
Like Shinobi Tradition.
Now, I'm not going to go into specific cards. I know.
But I can dream.
I do have a question about... you know, the production line itself of UFS cards that you have you know, you've published and you've put out there. You know, one thing I was noticing as I was kind of flipping through some of them is they all have really, really bright and really, really cool artwork and things like that. Now, do you do all of that stuff in-house, or is that like, is that stuff that you get from the licensed companies that you're getting those characters from? And like, what is
okay? So the art process will go through the art director. It's actually the creative director, Tom Kohler.
Okay.
The King of Fighters sets I actually directed myself, and so same with the Red Horizon set. So the last, I guess not even the last five releases, the last four releases, including the one coming out next week, plus the one coming out in January, I art directed those. Now, what that means is we did get some artwork from SNK for the King of Fighters sets, from the video game art and their own custom artwork. But a lot of it was done through us searching out artists, finding the ones we like to fit the style, mm-hmm. and then hiring them to do exactly what we want them to do. So if it's this move that we want, we'll hire them to do that move or this, you know, foundation or whatever else. And that's part of art directing in general, and creative directing is making sure, you know, it fits with the look of the game, it fits with the style of the card game that we want it to look like. I think we've done a pretty good job upgrading it. The art's, you know, taken more of a focal point, and I think it looks really good now, especially the new King of Fighters sets. And then, you know, Tom Kohler, he's our new creative director. He's going to be taking care of that from in the future, which he's done with Mega Man 10s, and you know, those look really great. Hiring out Archie for their comic book art, and we've hired some independent companies and studios to work on Darkstalkers and Mega Man, and those are looking really good.
So I have a question. My head's abuzz with all kinds of different ideas associated with the Mega Man universe and the UFS stuff, other areas where it might be able to go. Out of curiosity, do you guys have a website or a link or something to where people can go on and build a suggestion box or something?
Okay, well, on the main website, we do have a contact us, and then, you know, there's a bunch, you can get some of the card ideas or game ideas, anything like that. Obviously, I think this is something you'll be used to at any game site, is mm-hmm. if you submit ideas, they become our property. But if you don't mind, you know, your ideas becoming ours to use openly and, you know, maybe use your idea in a game or as a mechanic, then you're more than welcome to shoot us emails to the designers directly. A lot of the email will catch all to me, depending on what it is, and then I'll send it out sourced to who it needs to go to. But yeah, we are very open to suggestion. We love to listen to fans. In fact, most of, I don't know if Derek has mentioned this before, if I've mentioned this before, but if you look on like the back of our booster packs, or the card boxes themselves, the phone number is actually my direct cell phone line because of our very open door cool. policy.
Very yeah. cool.
Yeah, no, they've, as a development group, company, they are very responsive to their customers, especially on the forums. And like, I've called Jason up. We won't talk about him last night. I caught him as I was brushing his teeth last night. No, it's Friday night. So not to do that again. But I mean, like, but yeah, they are very open to.
If you call the main line, you know, like I said, it's the cell phone line. So I do work usually 13 to 15 hours a day, including weekends. So you're probably going to catch me at work regardless. But sometimes, you know, I might be at home or off of work, and we'll still be open to talk to the fans and the players.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's a good thing you like them all. You may not be able to tell us much, but you at least like your fans. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, I tell you, I've enjoyed this just very much like the last time we had them on. It's this Mega Man board game thing is going to be very entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
We will, of course... post all the information we can, even if we don't receive it till later than we expected, but that's okay. I know I'm excited about it. Is anybody else?
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
So, Don, I see you're over there writing down a possible fact for this wonderful episode, so I'll help you out at least a little bit. But, Derek, you have something first?
Yes, two things. First, when is Nationals?
Nationals is the second weekend of February, the one right between the Super Bowl and Valentine's Day. It's going to be in Las Vegas at the South Point Casino.
Oh, that'd be neat.
Yeah, I one of these years I've got to get to the Nationals. So,
That's it's probably my favorite event of all time. It's a lot of fun. I mean, all you can eat buffets, drunk UFS players.
And again, drunk UFS players are highly entertaining.
And it's so, Vegas, so you can't beat that.
Yeah, seriously.
What happens there stays there.
And secondly, is there anything else that you wish to let people know that...
perhaps we missed something.
Yeah, perhaps we missed something.
Oh, when, you said you've got a new set coming out. When is the... What's the release date?
Okay, so the newest set, actually this weekend, is the pre-release. It's the King of Fighters 13 Ruler of Time, introducing a new form of the mill mechanic, which hasn't been in the game in a very long time. It's going to be a very aggressive mill instead of defensive, sit back and just wait for your deck to die. So we're really excited about that.
Thanks, Derek.
The official release is next weekend on the 12th.
Okay.
And, you know, we're going to be doing an event for it. That's what we're here in Abilene, Texas for. Actually, I'm in the D&D room right now for this interview so that, you know, hear a lot of noise from our pre-release event next, right across the way. So, and then I think you mentioned something, if we missed anything, if you are looking forward to the Mega Man Kickstarter, the Mega Man board game to back it and, you know, add new minis and new elements to the game, follow us on our Facebook page. It's just Facebook/Mega Man, the board game, or our Twitter, and you'll get, you know, constant updates on there. We have, you know, a lot of people working on PR to make sure if you have questions, they're answered immediately, as, you know, the best we can answer them at the moment. But that's going to give you the quickest news, and you know we've had quite a few interviews with different game companies and magazines and things that are going to cover this. So you'll probably hear about it one way or the other if you're a Mega Man fan.
And we'll probably post these in the description.
Yeah, we'll put stuff in the show notes, and we will definitely keep. Whenever you let us know when your Kickstarter stuff opens up and all your licensing is done, we'll have links galore on our website.
Yeah. And I think we've added Derek to the media list, so he should be getting updates.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very
awesome.
Good.
One of the benefits of going to Gen Con was that we were able to buy one box of the Rulers of Time back in August, and it's releasing next week. So
So when this episode drops,
it will be released.
Yeah.
It's the weekend of...
It's the week after. The week after.
So, for those of you who are listening, if you haven't bought your box already, you better go out and get it, because it's already out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's definitely some really cool stuff. And January, you said you got another set coming out, so you'll have to let us know when that stuff comes. That way we can put links up and and blow up everybody's phone. I know that we don't necessarily have the biggest market in the world in Indiana for UFS, but we definitely want to build that for you. Up here, so I think that's definitely something. And I know you guys usually have a pretty big turnout at Gen Con, too, so that's always really exciting.
I know we have a lot of Mega Man fans. That...
And, yeah, I mean, who doesn't like Mega Man? I mean, really.
Exactly.
This is Josh again. I wanted to make a quick thank you to all our fans out there as we continue to recover from our website being down. Anton has been gracious enough to actually start hosting the website. All of the podcasts are still up in the cloud, as it may be. We still have about 25 more posts to go back and post on the new WordPress forum. But thank you very much for our your patience. We've needed it because it was kind of an annoying over the weekend type thing where they just basically deleted our website. But we're still getting out there, and thank you again. So, Don?
All right. So, on our last show... We established it's time for a modern classic before EA buys it up.
That's true.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And on this episode, again, we want to thank Jason from Jasco for being on our show and kind of giving us some really cool information and some not information.
I was going to say is I want to thank Jasco too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
So our new fact. The world of gaming is an ever-changing hobby. However, we can't talk about what's coming out, so...
All right, well, thanks, Jason.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Jason. And we will check you later.
Thank you.
See
you.
Bye.
Please visit us at www.theestablishedfacts.com and our Facebook page, facebook.com/theestablishedfacts. If you'd like to support us by buying some merchandise, visit cafepress.com/castingrobot.